Welcome to The Thing About Austen, a podcast about Jane Austen's world. I'm Zan.
And I'm Diane. And this episode, we're talking about Henry Tilney's greatcoat. So Catherine is finally headed to Northanger Abbey, and we are all excited.
Hooray!
At first, Catherine rides in the chaise with Eleanor and Eleanor's maid, while General Tilney rides with Henry in Henry's curricle. But after a stop at Petit France, see our previous episode on that topic, the general suggests a swap for the remainder of the journey, with Catherine taking his place in the curricle. So now Catherine is driving with Henry, just the two of them, and it's pretty much the happiest she's ever been in her entire life. Like, no big deal.
Yeah, this is her moment. Mm-hmm. She's been waiting for this. So here we have Catherine's thoughts from the text. The merit of the curricle did not all belong to the horses. Henry drove so well, so quietly, without making any disturbance, without parading to her or swearing at them. So different from the only gentleman coachman whom it was in her power to compare him with. And then his hat sat so well, and the innumerable capes of his greatcoat looked so becomingly important. To be driven by him, next to being dancing with him, was certainly the greatest happiness in the world.
I love the scene. Everything about it is perfect. It's so good.
She's so happy.
Catherine is my favorite. She's just so good.
She's a delight.
She is just so sweet, and I love it. I just love this.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, his hat sat so well. Just like,
oh, he's so swoony.
She's just glancing at him and being like, oh my goodness. Yeah, this is a real moment for Catherine, for sure.
Absolutely.
But we are here today specifically to talk about this greatcoat. So, what is a greatcoat? A greatcoat is often a generic term for a long, heavy overcoat. There are a lot of variations on this type of coat, and it could be considered the ancestor of our modern idea of the trench coat.
The greatcoat can also be called an overcoat, topcoat, surcoat, redingote. When you add capes, the name can also be a carrick, garrick, boxcoat, driving coat, or a coachman's coat. They were most often considered male attire, though variations of the greatcoat, such as the carrick coat or redingote, were adapted for both men's and women's fashions.
Greatcoats were also intended to layer over everyday attire, so this is all about protecting the clothing underneath during travel, keeping you warm, all of that.
Right. This is when Mrs. Allen is like, watch out for your clothes. We don't want to get them dirty in the carriage. This is where a greatcoat would be useful. The Handbook of English Costume in the 19th century describes the greatcoat of 1800 to 1810 as follows. The greatcoat was all enveloping to the knees or ankles, either single-breasted, the more usual, or double-breasted. Buttoned to just below the waistline, the buttons either covered or mother-of-pearl. The collar, high behind and moderately low in front, had an M or V step to the lapel. The full skirt covered the wearer completely, but, according to the Beau Monde in 1807, if the weather permits the coat to be worn flying loose, it certainly has a very dashing appearance.
Ooh. It's like a superhero
coattails
cape.
Flying. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I am here for adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So greatcoats were generally made of heavy wool to protect against both cold and wet. And to protect a gentleman against inclement weather, they were long, as we stated earlier, full, as waterproof as possible, and usually sported pockets. So this is like an all-terrain piece of clothing.
Mm-hmm. Multi-use, yes. Always got to have pockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
This also meant that these coats could be incredibly heavy. According to Hilary Davidson in Dress in the Age of Jane Austen, museum examples can weigh upwards of 3 kilograms, which is over 6.5 pounds if you use that system, which is a lot. That's a heavy, heavy coat.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely feeling like weighted down. You know, the feeling when you go to the dentist and they put that lead vest on you to
there you go.
Take your x-rays.
but that could be appealing in some ways. You know, I can see that.
I personally am into this like weighted blanket feel, so I might need to get myself one of these coats.
Yes.
So this article of clothing is obviously rooted in practicality and was in part drawn from the fashions of coach drivers. According to Davidson, quote, "For drivers, coachmen, postilions, and coachboy, a woolen greatcoat was an essential. Also known as a box, riding, or driving coat, the ankle-length greatcoat with a large collar emerged into middle-class fashion from the coachman's cloak, with its multiple capes over the shoulders to keep warmth in and wind and moisture out on long nights outside." I mean, they didn't have Gore-Tex back then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like, this has got to be not just a coat for warmth, but also to protect you from rain.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of utility that's really being demanded of this coat, for sure. And we have an example of this kind of very practical coachman's attire being described in the 1889 book Driving by Henry Charles Fitzroy Somerset, 8th Duke of Beaufort. In the book Driving, he describes what he considered the generic outfit of a hackney driver, and hackneys were essentially carriages for hire. So he writes, "The hackney coachman wore a heavy box coat with about 10 cloth capes, one over the other, encumbered with the weight of his protection from rain and cold." So again, we're getting this idea of bulk and layers.
I mean, it seems like it would be quite difficult, like on your shoulders, your neck, you know, it's just like a lot of weight to be carrying right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly, these coach drivers were the fashion inspo for some of the wealthy young men at the end of the 18th century when driving became a bit of a craze. The trend meant young men were aggressively driving about the place as an attempt to show off their skills. What character from Northanger Abbey does this remind us of?
We don't have to think too hard, do we?
Who could it be? And it also meant that some were imitating what was called stable style to look like they were really as skilled as the individuals whose livelihood actually depended on it. So there's a bit of putting on a costume going on here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, try to mimic the look of the coachman so that it might say something about your driving skills. Yeah. According to Nora Waugh's book, The Cut of Men's Clothes, 1600 to 1900, when driving carriages became the fashionable craze, the sporting fraternity took over the coachman's greatcoat with its multiple capes, the box coat. By the end of the 18th century, these greatcoats were becoming fashionable town wear.
So a bit of an evolution here going on with the fashion. Mm-hmm. Waugh continues to describe the evolution of the greatcoat moving into the early 19th century. Greatcoats were much in evidence and worn in town irrespective of weather conditions. The two main styles were, first, the greatcoat, or surtout, which was a double-breasted coat with the front cuts straight but the side seams and shoulder seams towards the back like the dress coat, the center back skirt being open with a slight lap over. It was worn very long, down to the ankles, with a collar and sometimes a cape.
This would have kind of been the greatcoat that fashionable men would wear more as kind of like an aesthetic object rather than like functional. So this is something you could wear to go out to a society event in the winter where it's kind of, again, it's got those cuts and seams in the back, much more like an imitation of kind of their daily jackets and coats.
The second style that was popular around this time was a bit more of the functional variety, meant for use when driving. Waugh describes it as the looser box coat whose side seams swung out from under the arms. It might have a belt or just the back fullness held in by a strap. It fastened with buttons or more usually with tabs. Its chief characteristic was still the layers of shoulder capes. Can't get rid of those shoulder capes, you know, we gotta...
Right. They are kind of an icon here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the trend of imitating this kind of stable fashion was enough of a fashion trend that other generations tended to satirize it because this was like, all these young boys, they're just so rambunctious. They've got to look like coachmen. And so according to one account by Lady Littleton, quote, "A set of hopeless young men who think of no earthly thing but how to make themselves like coachmen, and in order to improve each other, have formed themselves into a club, where they spend their time inventing new slang words, adding new capes to their greatcoats. It is not only on the box, but off it, in all society, that these ornaments of the present age choose to be mistaken for their coachmen." She's like, oh, these kids. the slang and the capes. But I love the satire, right? Because it's like, basically, it's telling us like generational debates is nothing new, right?
Uh-huh.
This like whole millennial, Gen Z, Gen X, like none of this is new. This is...
just like the kids these days. I cannot. Yeah. What are they even wearing? I mean, honestly, the only thing that would make this better for me is if she were saying something like, and they're going around dressing exactly the way that we dressed when we were kids. And now it's come back into fashion. Because I do find myself thinking that quite frequently as a middle-aged person, you know?
Yes. Oh, it feels very, very relevant. Oh,
yes.
Very relevant.
So in addition to the connections to Coachman, the greatcoat has connections to the military, especially during the Napoleonic era, with Napoleon being famously associated with his gray greatcoat. In the book, The Age of Napoleon, Costume from the Revolution to Empire, 1789 to 1815, which was edited by Cattell Laborie, we get a few more details about Napoleon's greatcoat. Quote, after the uniform and hat, the calf-length redingote was the third essential part of the ensemble chosen by the emperor to make himself readily recognizable. A capote, or greatcoat, as it was called by the emperor himself, it was made of wool cloth from Louviers, France. The armholes were ample enough to fit easily over a uniform with the epaulettes folded back. The collar was open and the comfort was provided by two folds in the back. Most of these capotes were gray, but starting in 1811, blue or green ones were ordered as well. When on winter campaign, the emperor wore a fur-lined velvet greatcoat that was longer and more generous than the average capote.
Yeah, he was really particular about his, yeah. So he's obsessed with his greatcoats, but we also have the greatcoats having something of an addition to military fashion around this time period as well. So that's not to say that they didn't exist before this, but it's to say that soldiers would have to provide their own greatcoats out of their own money before this era. Robert Henderson describes this change in uniform in his article, Not Merely an Article of Comfort, British Infantry Greatcoats During the War of 1812. So Henderson explains that savings from a change of clothing style in the British Army in 1798 provided part of the finances necessary for colonels of regiments to dress their men in the first issue of greatcoats. In 1801, the financing of greatcoats was undertaken by the Secretary at War through the Treasury, and by December 1802, all infantry regiments due greatcoats were assured a regular issue. So it becomes a staple of British military issue, which is kind of a new thing.
Henderson also points out that these greatcoats were initially made by various clothing agents of even individual regiment tailors. However, there were some issues with uniformity or quality that prompted a change in 1808 that mandated that, quote, all future production would be by contractors of the Treasury. For the rest of the Napoleonic Wars, the Secretary at War was responsible for the fabrication, distribution, regulation, and incurred costs of the military's greatcoats.
So it becomes a very standard issue type of coat at this time, very clearly associated with soldiers. So in Northanger Abbey, you know, bringing it all back to the novel, we have several references to greatcoats. In fact, it's mentioned 7 times specifically. So, you know, Austin was making sure we noticed.
Right, yes.
And so it comes up in a couple of these different types of contexts. So the first two mentions are when Mrs. Allen is thinking about her husband, who is out in Bath when it's raining. So she says, I hope Mr. Allen will put on his greatcoat when he goes. But I dare say he will not, for he had rather do anything in the world than walk out in a greatcoat. I wonder he should dislike it. It must be so comfortable.
She's like, it's like a snuggly blanket.
Why wouldn't he enjoy that?
I've often thought that Mrs. Elena and I have a few things in common, and I think this is one of them. You know, we would also just like to be under like a heavy weighted blanket.
Desire for home comforts, you know, is nothing to sniff at, basically.
So Davidson speculates that one of the reasons Mr. Allen might not be so fond of his greatcoat is that it is so heavy and cumbersome that he'd rather not put it on for a walk in the city. You know, it's not the sort of thing that you can just kind of quickly toss on and dash out the door. Again, there's no kind of lightweight Gore-Tex situation, you know? He's not
right.
Like, oh, I'm just putting on like my little rain jacket. This is a whole situation.
So the third reference comes after Captain Tilney has arrived in town. And Catherine is dancing with Henry, you know, having the time of her life. And the narrator indulges in a bit of commentary, stating that since Captain Tilney does not seem enamored of Catherine, there is no fear of, quote, animosities between the brothers. And, you know, also that he cannot be, quote, the instigator of the three villains in horsemen's greatcoats, by whom she will hereafter be forced into a traveling chaise and four, which will drive off with incredible speed. Really, really capturing that gothic moment. The narrator is like leaning into it.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, Catherine is safe from Captain Tilney and, you know, any possible tendencies towards gothic villainy that he might be entertaining.
So the next reference is about General Tilney's greatcoat. In this instance, the general actually uses the coat a bit like a blanket. Quote, instead of being brought for him to put on directly, was spread out in the curricle. So again, this is like the drive to Northanger Abbey when he starts out the drive riding with Henry. His greatcoat is spread out for him to sit upon.
Yeah, or folded over his lap as he needs, right? He can use it however he'd like.
It's essentially just like a gigantic piece of fabric, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, a heavy, warm fabric. Yeah, use it however.
Mm-hmm. It's very flexible. And the last references are all about Henry Tilney and his greatcoats, the most notable of these being the one we addressed at the top of the episode. And we really need to give this our undivided attention because what a moment it is.
And more specifically, I think we need to dedicate some time specifically to the capes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned the capes on the greatcoat several times now. And we know that Catherine is particularly impressed by Tilney's innumerable capes. You know, she's so swept away, she can't even count them. So let's get into this. What is with the capes?
What is with the capes? That is the question. So the capes on a greatcoat are different than the collar that could be turned up to protect the neck and face of the wearer. The capes are the draped material that circle around the shoulders and back of the coat. They are quite literally like mini capes attached to the collar of the coat. So imagine you're wearing a coat and there's sort of like a cape attached to that. I mean, that's been like a kind of fashion trend the last couple of years. It's like evening gowns that have a cape attached to them. But this
like
would not go all the
almost,
way down to the
ground.
Yeah, it's like a capelet that just is kind of going over the your torso. And you can just stack those on top of each other, like layers on a cake.
Yes. And the purpose of the capes are, first and foremost, a practical part of the outerwear. It's intended to create greater warmth and protection from the elements. So, again, just logistically, this makes sense. Multiple layers of the material meant for greater insulation of the body during chilly weather, and especially while riding out on the outside of a fast-moving vehicle or while riding a horse.
I'm just thinking, it's hard enough to ride a horse, you know? And then you got like this... giant coat on top of it.
Add another 8 pounds.
Yeah. Multiple capes also meant that if there was rain or snow, the top capes could keep the moisture from getting to the inner layers of the coat. That means that having a few capes on your greatcoat would be nearly essential for long journeys, whether on horseback or in carriages. It was necessary to protect you from the elements. So,
right.
In lieu of really great modern technical fabrics, you just
right.
If you stack up the layers enough, even if the outer layers are completely wet, you're like, hopefully there's enough layers that you will still be warm and dry on the interior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of those layers are serving as multiple kind of functions of the warmth, protection from the wet. Yeah, it's a very practical application of the capes. So a secondary reason for the multiple capes was really fashion and status, right?
Of course. I mean, obviously.
Obviously. Having several capes was a way to display wealth and refinement. The cost of the fabric and labor required for multiple capes definitely made them a status symbol.
And different cape layers allowed for variety and style. So fashion-conscious individuals could choose how many capes to wear based on their mood or the occasion. And some of these capes could be detached. So, you know, you had layering options. It's like later on in Northanger Abbey, right, when she kind of like, when she peeks into Henry's room and the line is something about like, it's like strewn with great coats. It's like, how many gigantic coats does this man own?
Yes. But again, you know, we already know that Catherine is enamored of the great coats. So the fact that he has multiple great coats, not just innumerable capes, but multiple great coats. I mean, So many of the driving clubs that emerged during this era also used capes as a way of signaling their potential prowess with horses and driving. The implied logic was something like, I drive so fast that I need a bajillion capes to keep me protected from the elements. Like, who knows how fast I can go? I might have a breeze that finds its way through. And so I need all of the capes, all of them.
Which is funny because it's just not the most aerodynamic piece of clothing. So,
oh, I know. I could just like, you can imagine them just flapping in the wind, just getting everywhere.
I mean, if you catch the gust wrong, that could like lift you up off of your horse.
Airborne.
Like, now you're flying. Now you're Batman. Like, you are now Batman, like floating above a horse.
I'm sure that's what they were going for.
Yeah, absolutely. There are other style considerations at play as well. According to Davidson, she writes, the innumerable shoulder capes broadened the wearer's shoulders, increasing his active, masculine, physical presence and made him look becomingly important. In a similar vein, according to LaBarie, one of the potential reasons for the many capes on a greatcoat was that, quote, this also fulfilled a man's desire to look like a husky warrior. That's going into top 10 quotes for the podcast right there. Translation, Henry looks good. Good. And Catherine is into it.
Yes. So when she's staring at this greatcoat, that greatcoat with all its capes, like this is such a moment for Catherine.
When you've got a guy wearing a greatcoat with innumerable capes, again, truly one of the happiest moments of her entire life right now in this moment. And I understand. To be clear, I am in no way making fun of Catherine. I am right there with her.
I mean, if you're not swooning, I don't think you've like got the visuals right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like really mm-hmm. think about this husky warrior imagery. So to kind of round out the scene, you know, we've got Henry driving the curricle, obviously Catherine having an entire like euphoric situation here. It is kind of funny though, like when you think about the context of the great coats with all of its capes being associated with the drivers and riders, and the only other person that Catherine has to compare to is John Thorpe.
And his horrible driving.
Yeah. Yeah. So like when she's like, you know, he's not even swearing at the horses. Like, like that's her comparison point. Like, good job, Henry, tell me.
You're not as bad as John Thorpe.
So yeah, Henry comes off so well here, at least in part, because of the favorable comparison to John Thorpe, which is perhaps, you know, a slight diminishment of Henry's greatness because, you know, as Diane would say, moldy garbage comes off pretty well when compared to Thorpe.
Not trying to take anything away from Henry Tilney and his greatness, and I do really think that it seems pretty clear that Catherine is genuinely very into Henry Tilney in this moment. But the fact that she's even just kind of like, oh, he's so much better than John Thorpe. I'm like, yeah, but who isn't? Like,
literally anyone is going to look great compared to Thorpe.
It's really just another example of like how sweet Catherine is and the fact that she's basically, she knows no one. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
this is,
mm-hmm.
she went to Bath, she met a few people, and this is it. Like,
that's her spectrum. Yeah, that's her spectrum is Thorpe and Tilney.
Those are her two, that's like her entire framework for eligible bachelors, John
mm-hmm.
Thorpe and Henry Tilney. It's not a hard choice, you know, when those are your options.
Yeah, there is a standout option for sure. For sure there is. So yeah, it's not surprising that this would put Catherine into raptures, that she's next to this husky warrior, you know?
In fairness to Henry Tilney, I think we can very safely say that even without John Thorpe in the picture, even if she had never met John Thorpe, she would probably still be swooning here in this moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So
agreed.
Because, again, husky warrior, like, come on.
That is a trump card to be playing here. And Henry unwittingly has played that to the top of his bent.
Well, if you have any thoughts on Henry's driving, John Thorpe's driving, husky warriors, etc., you can find us on Instagram at thethingaboutaustin and on Twitter at austin_things. You can also check out our website, thethingaboutaustin.com, and you can check out our merch for the podcast on Redbubble at aboutaustin.redbubble.com. And you can always email us at thethingaboutaustin@gmail.com. And we actually have an email to share this week from listener Miranda Cook. And this is about our episode on the haha. So Miranda writes, I thought you might appreciate the story of when we were having a picnic here. And then there's a link to Addingham Park, which is an estate in the UK. And our son, who must have been about 9, finished eating first and got bored and restless. I told him to run over to an oak tree we could see and back to get his fidgets out. As he was running, he suddenly vanished. He had fallen into the ha-ha that none of us could see from where we were sitting. Luckily, he was totally unhurt and we pulled him out quite easily, but he was very surprised by it. So again, ha-has are dangerous, like we said.
Oh my gosh, I'm glad he's okay, but oh my gosh, what a visual. Oh my goodness.
It's one of those stories that is like, it's very amusing because everybody was fine.
Right, right. But also demonstrates exactly what we were talking about. Like, ha-has are treacherous, man.
Ha-has are treacherous. Anyway, thank you to Miranda for sharing that in and giving us permission to share that with all of our listeners.
That was fantastic. I needed that so much. That was amazing.
Stay tuned for the next episode when we'll be talking about dueling.
Thank you for listening.